What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Back Row with Jamie Kilstein. My name is Jamie Kilstein. I have substantially less cups. I do not know how you guys did not just completely harass me for the amount of cups I had. It was like a bit where, like, every time you cut back, I'm just like adding more like candy and cups and whatever. Anyway, I have my tea. I sacrificed my coffee for you guys, half because I needed less cups, half because I'm pretty sure that coffee is linked to like all of my anxiety and depression. And I never put that together because coffee's just the thing that you enjoy in the morning. And you're like, oh, I want to like wake up and like have a cup of coffee in bed with my wife and read a book. And so you associated with like, all those old Folgers commercials where it was like, your grandpa was a World War II veteran and he's going to tell you about the time he scalped a Nazi over a hot cup of Joe or whatever. And so you associate coffee with killing of Nazis and just like sunrises. But every time I think I'm having a good day and I'm driving and I'm like, hey, you know what would make this day better if like I died. I realize it's not because I want to die. It's usually because I had three cold brews in a row and just the anxiety is like palpable. And I wasn't going to talk about this at all. I wasn't like riff on coffee because that seems very boring. Oh, but by the way, the show is called The Back Row. The show is about feeling like you're in the back row of everything, church, politics, culture, and just watching and being like, why are they doing that? Why is everyone doing that? I just want to be nice and everyone's going crazy. And why can't we just talk it out? And I don't really belong here and I'm sad. There you go. There's the elevator pitch of what this show is. I'm not a pastor, so none of you get mad at Tim Ross. I like Jesus and being, you know, a decent person. And then I'll tell dick jokes. My only notes are dead babies, Instagram questions, and Hawaii. So that's cool. That's sick knowing that that's all coming. Okay, coffee. This is like legit advice, legit mental health advice. Sometimes when you go from like zero to depressed, you need to kind of take inventory of your day because oftentimes when you're sad, you will jump to the worst conclusion. So you're not going to go, man, I'm feeling sad. I wonder if I had too much coffee. Or I'm feeling sad. Oh, that's right. I'm like kind of jet lag. Or I'm feeling sad. I probably need to go to the gym. It's always like, I'm feeling sad. God hates me. I'm going to die alone. I'm garbage and fat. And that's usually like, we just go to being so mean to ourselves. That was one of the things that really helped me with like internet trolls where I'm like, oh, you think you hate me, buddy. You have no idea how much I hate me. Like, you think what you said on that pithy Instagram, that's like a burn to me? What's going on in my head, you will never top. No one is meaner to me than me. I will forever hold that record. It is laughable what you are trying. And you're wasting all that time when clearly you're projecting because you hate yourself. That's all right. Keep it in. If you guys hear girls giggling, just pretend it's fans of mine. And they're just like knocking on the door. Okay. So whenever you get like super depressed from out of nowhere, take some deep breaths. Because you got to do something to regulate your nervous system first, right? So you take some deep breaths. You go to the gym. You go outside. You put on music. Something to like change up your physical state. You don't scroll on TikTok or do something like that. Or what I do sometimes because I like to have cups and things with my hands. That's why I smoked. I hated smoking. I just liked doing this. Should have just jerked people off. That would have been better. But I didn't. I smoked. And I just liked occupying myself with my hands. And so so a lot of times I'll do that with coffee where I'll just be like, I'll just be pounding coffee while I'm already anxious. Not the move. So what you have to do is you have to change up your state in a healthy way. Like I said, music, a walk, whatever. And then once that happens, you can start analyzing why you're upset. You can't, when your body and your nervous system are all over the place and shutting down and you're having anxiety, you can't jump right away to let's figure this out because you're a mess, right? Like if you walk up to someone and they're having like a drug OD, if they're ODing on drugs and they're flopping around and they're foaming at the mouth, you're not going to go up to them and be like, hey, man, like, what made you want to start taking drugs? They're just going to be like, and then they're going to die. You have to change their physical state, right? You have to, like, get them composed and stable first. So if you're struggling with depression or we're going to talk about, like, you know, really negative self-talk, you have to change your physical state first or else your nervous system is just going to continue to tell you that like everything's on fire. So whatever it is, it could literally be a walk. Like I'll take phone call. When I take phone calls, especially if I'm depressed, I go walk around my neighborhood while I take the phone calls and it's huge. So then once you've got your nervous system under control, that's when you can figure out what's going on. And most of the time, you guys, it's not that your life is falling apart. Most of the time, it's just you're feeling depressed because you hit the snooze button too many times or you didn't get enough sleep. And so when you didn't get enough sleep, you drank more coffee. And when you drank more coffee, you were jittery. And then you were jittery. So you're like, fuck, I just got to eat something. So then you ate bad food and then you ate bad food and then you crashed and then you took a nap and you're like, man, my body's still kind of shaking. And like, but I know my mind's really tired and I want to sleep. I know what puts me to sleep. MILFs. And so then you like look at porn and then you wake up from your nap and you're just like, oh, did I do the MILF thing again? And then you hate yourself and now you're like dragging even more. So you're like, well, I'm gonna have more coffee, and then that shoots your anxiety back up again. And you're like, you know what? I don't really think I said everything to my ex that I need to. So then you call her and now your heart's racing. And like you just every little thing you do can either make you be on the path to feel better or worse. It's like a very simple choose your own adventure. And on one side is like meditate for 5 minutes. And on the other side is like the most toxic of your exes. And it's like, which one do you want, dude? Do you want the sun shining? Or do you want like the evil woods with them whispering like, but our sex was good? Like, what are you going to choose? And so every day, it's like you want to be doing, I think Tim talks about this. I heard some pastor talk about this recently, and because it was about therapy, I assume it was Tim, and not some other pastor that's just like, my only therapist is the Holy Spirit, where it's like, it's maintenance, and you want to be going to therapy, you want to be working out, you want to be doing all these things when things are good, so that you are more aware when things crash. If the only time you start enacting healthy behaviors is when you're crashing, you're digging out of a hole, right? So I'm for the first time, I'm going to create a budget, and I've never had a budget before. And every time I've wanted to create a budget, I haven't because I've been completely underwater. And right now, I'm not completely underwater. So actually starting a budget when things are good financially is really exciting because I go, oh, I get to put something away for, what's that, retirement? I get to have a little fund that when I hit this, I get to go on a vacation. And what, I just have to like not order Uber Eats like 5 times a week, not pay $50 for Sonic mozzarella sticks because of all the taxes and fees. Sick. Okay, awesome. So I'm excited to budget because things are good, as opposed to if you wait to budget when things are bad, you feel like garbage. You feel like, oh, I can't take my girlfriend out on a date because dum-dum can't keep his finances in order or I have too much credit card debt or whatever. Do it when things are good. I think I've said this on the show, but like I had an ex who would only meditate when she was mad. So like you're supposed to meditate every day to cultivate mindfulness. So Quick tangent, meditation advice. I don't know why this podcast got totally self-helpy. I know why. I'm desperately trying to avoid talking about dead babies in Israel and Palestine. And so I'm like, here's another helpful hack. Unlike them hacking up those kids, bap, 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 subscribe to my YouTube channel. God, the world is bad. All right, focus, everybody. Listen, meditation advice. Most people don't meditate because they go, this sucks dick. And it does. But then the other people don't meditate because they're like, I suck at meditating. And you do, kind of. So we think that meditation means we sit there and have no thoughts. And the exact opposite is true. Everyone is going to have thoughts. Even like your like most professional Zen Buddhist, whatever, meditator who's on a hilltop, he is going to have thoughts, right? Thoughts are good if you don't think about them as you are doing meditation wrong. Thoughts are the rep. And what I mean by that is just like at a gym, you're just hitting reps and those reps are going to hurt your muscles, but then your muscles recover and that makes you stronger. When you have the thought in meditation, that doesn't mean your meditation is over and you lost. The point of meditation isn't to have no thoughts. If we had no thoughts, we would be dead, would be robots. The point is you're meditating, you're being Zen, you're trying to focus on your breath, or you're trying to count, or you have a mantra, or whatever it is. Then you have a thought, and then you're drifting off into like, you know, whatever, man, like pickles are overrated or whatever you're thinking about. And then you get mad at yourself for having the thought and you go, God, why can't I just like meditate and not think about pick every time it's pickles? And you're just getting super upset. And then you go, oh, I'm having a thought. I'm not meditating anymore. And then you go back to your breath. When you're sitting in traffic and someone is going the speed limit in the far left lane, and you're like, who is this piece of shit? What is this presidential motorcade thinking they're doing, being in the lane that you're supposed to do illegal things in, and they're going the speed limit? I'm going to hit them. I saw a YouTube video once where I saw if you hit the back corner of a car, that gets them to spin out, and then they'll die. And sure, I'll be on the road run for murder, but like I'll be able to use the left lane, so that's good. When you start to have those intrusive thoughts, the rep of the meditation goes, oh, wait, I'm not an angry person, and this person's probably old, and I'm just going to pass them, and everything's going to be okay. Without the thought in your meditation and then going back from the thought to your breath, you don't actually build the skill of mindfulness. The skill comes from having the thought, being okay with the thought, going back to the breath. The skill of being mindful in your real life is, I'm about to throw a fit because there's a long line at the grocery store. Take a deep breath. I'm going to be mindful. Oh, I keep going to my phone. I probably have anxiety or I'm looking for validation. I'm going to put my phone in a drawer and I'm going to go pray. Whatever it is. So that's why we meditate. We don't do what my ex did, which is I would go like, hey, let's just talk about it. And she goes, I'm going to meditate. That's not how you should ever start a meditation session, is angrily screaming at your boyfriend, I'm going to meditate. I don't know what that meditation looks like. I don't know if it's just fantasizing about murdering me. Whatever it is, it's probably not meditation, not to mansplain. Okay, so that's my meditation advice. So in summation, you need to have the skills before you have the freak out, right? You can't only go to the gym every time you hate yourself, or every time you eat shitty. You can't only dude, I will treat fasting like an eating disorder. I'll hear like John Mark Comer do a podcast and be like, do a podcast about fasting and spiritual disciplines. And we want to be like Jesus. And even Jesus fasted when he had to like, you know, fight the devil. And sometimes when you starve your body, that helps with temptation. And I'm like, cool. Also, am I going to burn off those 10 pounds of spam I ate in Hawaii? Like, that's not communicating with God. That is, that's an eating disorder. So we don't want to do that. We want to have these healthy practices, in place already, for when shit hits the fan. So when it does hit the fan, we're not just like desperately clinging on to anything we can. And chances are, like, if you're starting from a rock bottom, it's going to be really hard to keep those good skills. So if you're in a really good place now and you've wanted to try jujitsu, or you've wanted to try meditation, or you've wanted to try a budget, do it now when you're not putting so much pressure on yourself for that thing to fix all of you, right? So that's number one. Number two is, if you're in your head, if you're hating yourself, do something to get into your body before you start assessing it. Then when you do assess it, if all you're coming to, if the only conclusions you're coming to are, I'm unlovable, I'm garbage, that's probably not real. And it probably has to do with like some changes we can make up top with just how we live our day-to-day life. Okay. Here's an example of how I use self-control, and I was rewarded by God. Do you ever think you're rewarded by God, but you realize that like it's because something shitty happened to somebody else, and you go, okay, maybe that wasn't God. Like every time I'll have someone tailgate me, and then I move over and they get stuck behind even a slower car, I'm like, thanks, Jesus. And I'm like, I don't think that was Jesus. Maybe that was just good luck. But I did that the other day on the plane. So I was in the bulkhead seat, which we call fake first class. It's where you just kind of, you're the row behind first class. You have some extra leg room and you just pretend. Why not, right? When she's coming by with champagne, you go, ha, over here. Just kidding. You can sneak into the first class bathroom, as I do a lot. It's great. By the way, that will show you how big of a hypocrite you are and why we can never take ourselves seriously. Every time I sneak into the first class bathroom, I'm just like, yeah, it's an emergency. No one's using it. Who cares? Every time I'm in first class and I see some scumbag hooligan from Coach or Economy Plus coming to use my bathroom, I'm just like, hey, can we get the peasant out of here? What does he think he's trying to do? And I like want to like narc him out. Anyway, call yourself when you're being a hypocritical asshole, as I just did to thousands of people. So I'm on a plane. I'm flying back from Hawaii. And I have kind of a deep, sad story that I wasn't going to, I'll tell it. But this is the fun story. There's this dude, this like taller kind of scrawny dude who we land in Austin at midnight. So there's no connecting flight. You're not running for anything. He could be late. But as everybody gets up, he just like books past everyone, which is fine. Like, again, if you're in a rush and there's no one in your way, skip a couple aisles. No problem. I'm already up. So he like runs like this close to me. And he's like on me, like I'm on this mic right now. And I go, hey man, do you need to get through? I didn't go, hey man, what's your problem? I didn't go, back off. I just said, do you need to get through? And that's when, if he's in a rush, he goes, yes, thank you so much. That's what any normal person does, right? And he just goes, yeah. Like I was supposed to be cleared out for the royal prince who was sitting in 32C. And that's when I had to kind of pull back, because I want to go, it's going to be hard for you to rush to wherever you are, wherever you're late to, when I break your legs for talking to me that way, right? That's not helpful. You don't want to do that. You don't want to do that. But you do want to go like, hey man, be cool, or chill out, or there's nowhere to go. And instead, I just went, okay, buddy. And I moved out of the way. And guys, again, God isn't petty like we are. But man, at the time, I definitely did one of like pointed to the sky. The largest man I've ever seen, a guy that you are not going to push by. The second this dude goes by me, this guy sits up from real first class. And now the guy who pushed past me is here to me. And this very large man is here. And where I got a little petty is I just went, aw, not helpful. That's not helpful. I shouldn't have done that part. And he like, you could tell like his body wanted to turn around to take it out on me, but he just knew he was an asshole and he deserved it. Then I swear to God, like this big fat dude was the mayor of the plane. He takes so long to leave, and he has made friends with the entire first class during the flight. We don't know this. So he's like shaking hands goodbye on this United flight. He gets to the exit of the plane. This guy is like ready to go, freaking out. Guys, he starts hugging the flight attendants. He's just like, girl, thank you so much. And she was just like, it was a pleasure serving you. And he goes, no, it was a pleasure serving you. Then this guy goes to get by, hugs the second flight attendant. And it was just one of those beautiful moments where I don't want to bask in someone else's pain, even though that person was a jerk to me. But if you're gonna have your selfishness, hurry, whatever, shoved in your face, having it shoved in your face by the nicest guy possible, it was just the best. It's like, if this guy was to learn a lesson, I feel like this would be the lesson to learn. Because he's the kind of guy where if people were just being slow, or if somebody had their baby or service dog, he would have been like, ah, screw them, like, blah, blah, blah. But to see just the opposite of him, like bizarro him on an airplane, where it's like, this is what happens when you treat people with love and kindness and everyone wants to hug you. It just made me so happy. So the lesson there, just don't be a dickhead. Don't be a dick. Be the person that the flight attendant wants to hug. Don't be the person that's shoving by the flight attendant, right? There you go. There's your lesson. I had a total identity crisis in Hawaii. And I'm going to write about this because I'm probably not ready to talk about it. Sam, you lived in Hawaii. It's probably something I'll talk to you about maybe off air. But I think for a lot of Hawaiians who have lived in the diaspora, who have been displaced or outpriced or don't feel like they belong in Hawaii, there's a lot of identity crisis that kind of happens with that. I've talked about it before. Especially I look so white. It's very hard for me to accept I'm Hawaiian. I love the Hawaiian culture. When I think about me as a human, when I think about me as a white person, I go, yeah, I look howly. I look like the people who oppressed Hawaiians. I feel racist when I say mahalo, like mahalo, brah, like when your friend comes back from the UK and starts saying cheers until you have to have like an intervention with him. That is very much how I feel. Anytime I speak pidgin or Hawaiian, I have to tell them I'm Hawaiian first so they don't think I'm just like a white influencer doing what they do. And I love the Hawaiian traditions and I love Hawaii and I feel so at home whenever I feel like the wind, whenever I step off the plane. But I've also battled with imposter syndrome for a really long time. And so every time I've wanted to go back to Hawaii, it hasn't been when I've been in a good place. It's been kind of like I'm running and I want Hawaii to fix me, or I want to figure out who I am. And it's never worked. But this time, things are really good in my life. And this awesome activist who I was a fan of was like, come stay with me and like ground yourself. I got the traditional like tap tattoo. It's called Ala Niho, from like my hip to my ankle, which is like all the it's like my ancestors' lineage. You don't pick what you get. You have to get accepted. You have to be Hawaiian. It's by like a priest. It's very traditional. It's just hours of just them hammering into you. That'll make a man out of you when it hits your knee, by the way. It was crazy. And I felt, this is why I can't really talk it out yet, I felt a conflict with Hawaii and Jesus, which I did not expect. And I did not like. I thought it was going to be so simple. Like my lit agent was like, bro, write about when you go to Hawaii, write about like getting marked and that experience. And I was so cocky. I like started writing it before I even left. I was like, oh, dude, this is such an easy fucking chapter. I'm going to write about getting dunked in the ocean before I get marked for my like Hawaiian tribal ancestry. And I've had imposter syndrome with being Hawaii. And then I'm going to cut back and forth between my baptism and getting dunked in that water and accepting Jesus because I also have imposter syndrome about being Christianity. And oh my God, this chapter is going to make so many people cry. And I'm probably going to get invited to do a TED talk. And oh, can I, even though I look white, can I speak at diversity conferences? Cause that's going to pay the bills. Like all of these thoughts were going through my head, not the diversity conference one. And then I got there and it was immediately like, there are Christians who say that you can't embrace a lot of the Hawaiian traditions because they're like not Christ-like or whatever. And then there are Hawaiians who are like, fuck Christians because a lot of the missionaries destroyed a lot of their traditions and land and are still doing it, even though Hawaii has a wildly huge Christian population. And so I kind of got dropped in the middle of this like civil war between like Jesus and like Pele, the volcano god, that I didn't even think existed. Because to me, the most important characteristic about Hawaiians is aloha spirit. And aloha spirit is not just something that they put on a coaster when they're trying to overcharge you for Mai Tais at some fake luau in Waikiki. Aloha spirit is true love. It's true Christ-likeness. It's loving your neighbor. It's loving your enemies. It's like, that's what aloha spirit is. Aloha spirit is saying hi to people walking down the street, even if you're in New York City. Like I remember I used to do that in New York. And my ex would always like make fun of me or tell me not to like, you know, wave at a baby or pet a stranger's dog. And I told my mom that. And my mom goes, that's your aloha spirit. You don't let her take that away from you. And I was like, oh, okay, mom. Like she got like heated. And that to me is what being like Christ-like is like, right? It's not just like going to church on Sunday and then judging Christian influencers in comment sections. It's, you know, truly walking around and being like, how can I bring more love to this coffee shop, this street corner, this neighborhood, this homeless person, my best friend, you know, all that stuff. That's being Christ-like. That is aloha spirit. The thing I think about the most when I went to Hawaii as like a keiki, as like a kid, was it was like a joke where if you hit a four-way stop sign, you would just be sitting there being like, no, 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 you go. No, 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 you go. And these older aunties like, no, 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 you go. Like that's aloha spirit. And so to me, there's so much similarity between aloha spirit and being Christ-like, but this is what happens, right? When we live in a world where Christians have just bastardized Jesus, essentially. And I was trying to tell one of my friends who's a pretty strong atheist just because he's seen the damage that Christians have done. I was like, man, that's what I went through. That's why it took me till 39 years old to find Jesus, is because Christians were in my way. Can Christians stop cock blocking people from getting to Jesus? How about that? Put that on a shirt. Can you guys like stop being so awful that you're stopping? Jesus should be a pretty easy sell, right? Hey, God came down to live like us, to feel what we feel. He gave his son. He came down. Guess what Jesus did when he was here? He was just really cool. That's it. You've had some sex shame issues? Great. Come follow me. You're a tax collector. Everybody hates you. Great. Come with me. Like, you can't even fish because you're kind of slow. Whatever. You're going to do things. Like, he just grabbed all these like struggling people. He led with love. He was like, he wasn't hurrying. He wasn't doing like Gary V, like, oh, you got to hug. Like, I'm always grinding. These are me and my boys. Like, he was just walking, just slow and healing people and loving people. And like, you know, when like, when you have the friend who like, even though that friend's so cool, whenever you just need a second to recharge, like that friend's like, hey man, I'm just going to go in the woods for a couple of days. Oh my God, the dream. Jesus just like peace out. He just goes to the woods and he prays and he does his thing. He plays with kids. He's just the best dude. And then he's like, hey, you guys are all broken and terrible, so I'm going to get tortured and die just so you can live, right? So he does that, and then ta-da! He comes back from the dead. But there you go. There's the story of Jesus. You're welcome. Hard to mess up, right? It should be a really easy, I'm loved, I'm forgiven, I'm shown grace. I'm held accountable, I'm loved, I'm forgiven, I'm shown grace, I'm held accountable, I'm loved. Great. Fantastic. And then Christians were like, what if we take that message and take out the love part and then we just like beat up a gay? How about we do that? Or like, what if, and then Catholics were like, what if we use this house of God to like rape kids? And then, and Jesus was like, guys, all you have to do is love. And they're like, no, I got something better. What if, you know what I mean? Like, we colonize an entire people and we squash them in your name. And he's like, nope, just, can you just love? What if we take the money that people are giving to the church and we spend it on Lamborghinis while the church is falling apart? What, you know what I mean? Like, we, the fact that I grew up, and the only thing I knew about Christians because of our politicians was that they don't want gay people marrying and that they're bombing Iraq. I had no interest in Jesus. But then you become a Christian and you realize like, no, the reason we need Jesus is because we are broken. And the people who have killed in God's name or hated in God's name or squashed out civilizations or traditions in God's name, they're people. They didn't have a direct line to God. God wasn't like, go to Hawaii and get rid of the hula, right? God, no. And so it crushes me. It crushes me to see the thing I love the most, which is God. You go to this place I love the most, which is Hawaii, and you see all the damage that have been done by people who are supposedly like me or love the same thing that I love. And you can't really have damage and love in the same place. You know what I mean? You can have selfishness. You can have, like, when you think about colonialism, you don't think about kindness, right? We may say that, oh, we're helping them. They're these savage people or whatever. But, like, I don't know, man. Look at, like, the Romans compared to, like, who Jesus hung out with. Like, the Romans had better weapons. They were more, quote-unquote, civilized than, I think, I don't know. I'm talking about the Bible more than I'm really just talking about The Chosen. I'm like, from what I remember in The Chosen, I've seen more episodes of The Chosen than I've read passages in the Bible. But I stand by what I say. I think that's pretty accurate. And so I feel like whether you know a ton about the Bible or you're learning like I am, I feel like love is at the center of it, right? Can we, like, yeah, I think love's at the center of it. And so why don't we spend more time? I could get in trouble for saying this. Sam, tell me if we need to edit this out. Why can't we spend more time asking ourselves if we're making a loving choice than even being like, ah, I got to find a passage of scripture that matches up for this? Yes? Okay. Like, because scripture can be like, anyone can do anything they want with scripture. Anything can do anything they want with saying they hear God, right? But like, love is pretty cut and dry. And by the way, sometimes love means having like a hard conversation with a friend. Love's not always just like, I'm gonna just hug everybody and love everybody and be a doormat, right? We're gonna talk about Israel-Palestine and you guys are probably terrified about what I'm gonna say, but I'm not gonna be like, terrorists are terrorists, right? Like, the thesis of my Israel-Palestine segment, spoiler alert, is killing Israeli civilians is bad and killing Palestinian civilians is bad. There you go, right? That doesn't mean I think Hamas is good, and that doesn't mean I think that Netanyahu is good. That's where I stand. So loving everyone might mean you got to kill some terrorists, right? Like that's just the thing we have to do to keep people safe. Blindly supporting one or the other side, squashing civilians and going, that's what they get, which I've seen very famous people, including famous Christians, do. That's not loving, right? Telling your friend, sitting your friend down and having a hard conversation that he's drinking too much. That's loving. It's hard. It sucks. That's loving. Apologizing to your girlfriend when she doesn't even know you made a mistake, right? And telling her, hey, here's something I could have done better, even though you didn't call me out. I'm going to work on it. That's loving. You should always, as a Christian, your first thing, as a good person, it should be like, are the words coming out of my mouth? Is my action, is this coming from love? Because if it's not coming from love, it's coming from fear. It's coming from insecurity. It's coming from anger. It's coming from projection. It's coming from all those places. So I was really torn. So that's all going to tie into the Israel-Palestine stuff. But just to finish up the Hawaii thing, I was really torn, man. And maybe some of you guys have imposter syndrome. Maybe some of you guys are mixed race. Maybe some of you guys are the only Christian friend in your group or the only atheist friend in your Christian or the only atheist in your Christian family, you know, whatever. But we all know what it feels like to not belong. And, you know, there were times where I just didn't want to have an awkward conversation. So I was just like, yeah, fuck Christians or whatever. And I was kind of ashamed of that. There were times when I went out to the beach to like sneak listening to like a Maverick City song because I felt like I like wasn't supposed to be talking to Jesus on this trip, which was like super weird. I got food poisoning at the end of my trip. And so I'm lying in bed and I'm like, which God did this to me? Like I went crazy. I'm like, was this the volcano God or was this Jesus? Like who did I wrong? I was like so hating myself. And when I got back on the plane, I was just like, well, obviously the chapter I was going to write is complete trash and would be a lie if I wrote it. But the plane ride back was awful. The plane ride there was so great. It was like an all Hawaiian flight crew. It was just all these like older aunties like sneaking me free food because they knew I was Hawaiian. The flight crew back was just like angry white people who still had to put flowers in their hair. Very different vibe. I also like was breaking every carry-on rule. So I was just like nervous. It was early. I hadn't been sleeping. I was like a day out of like, I was still feeling kind of food poisoning. And I was so sad because the goal of Hawaii was to go back to Hawaii and feel like I was home. And to be like, this is my home. Even if I live in Texas, Hawaii is my home. I will one day move back to my home. I don't feel accepted in any part of my life. I don't feel accepted in church. I don't feel accepted. I mean, like I am. But at the worst, when I'm at my worst, I'm telling myself I'm not accepted here. I'm not accepted there. It's just imposter syndrome stuff. I go, but Hawaii will be my home. And I'm like learning Nolelo Hawaii. I'm learning like the language. I'm like all this stuff. Now I have the tattoo, so I'm like, all right, this is it. Fucking I look white. I'm just going to point down to this tattoo. It's ridiculous. And now I'm on this plane, and I'm like, oh, I don't even belong there because I love Jesus, and I thought loving Jesus would make me more. Like, it's just awful. And there's one Hawaiian on the flight crew, and he is in my aisle. And I go, hey, how's it, man? And he helped me with my illegal bags because I bought an ukulele. And so I was like shoving that in my backpack, even though it's another carry-on. And then my other bag was like overstuffed. And he's like, let me help you. And like we took it out. And he was just super sweet. He was like this older gay guy. And so every time I went back to the bathroom or to get a cup of coffee, I would like talk story with him a little bit. And he goes to me, I'm waiting for the bathroom. This is so cheesy, guys, but it's just true. I'm waiting for the bathroom and I'm supposed to write this stupid chapter that I'm trying to write on the plane about like what home is and what that word even means. And he goes, oh, so do you have a gig in Austin? And I go, oh, no, I live there. And he goes, oh, I thought you lived in Hawaii. And I could have hugged this dude. I was just like, you know, I'm Hawaiian. And he's like, yeah. And I was like, oh, okay. And I just asked him what his name was. His name was Royce. Royce happens to be listening. And I just went back to my seat beaming, where I was like, so many times we look for these things to define us because we don't feel like we are enough. So we have to be like, I'm the one in my friend group who's just like always shouting about Jesus, or I'm the Hawaiian, or I'm the super liberal, or I'm the super conservative, or it's just like, please put me in a box because when I have too much space, I destroy myself and I don't know what to do. So can we make me as small as possible? So I just have this rule set and I just go, this is who I am. Like, even though I'm kind of conservative on this issue, I'm just going to call myself a liberal because it's easier. And even though, like, I really don't like what that Christian influencer said, like, I'm just a Christian and like, I got to get on his podcast. So like, whatever. And we just want to put ourselves in a box because freedom is fucking scary. Freedom's scary. And in that moment where he saw my Hawaiianness, he saw my aloha spirit, even though I'm going back to Texas, he goes to me, he goes, do you know that Austin is now the number one place outside of Las Vegas? Or it just beat Las Vegas for the number one place where Hawaiians live. And I just had this like, all right, I see you, God, kind of moment in the sky, essentially being like, hey man, yes, you're Hawaiian and Austin is your home right now. You don't have to live in Hawaii. You don't have to be in the Middle East to love Jesus. You don't have to be in Hawaii to have aloha spirit. You don't have to be in Dublin to be an alcoholic, whatever it is, right? I've been too earnest for too long. I had to get some cheesy joke in. And I realized that, here comes the sappy Christian moment of the show. When you have Jesus, it's like your home always, dude. Like your home when you're struggling and broke. Your home when you're crushing it. Your home when you're in Hawaii. Your home when you're a Hawaiian raised in New Jersey like I was. Your home when you're single and trying to find yourself. Your home when you've fallen in love and found the woman you're going to marry. Like, you're cool, man. You're covered. You don't need to struggle so much for identity or validation, which is often what we're really looking for with identity. We're looking for a tribe. When you have Jesus, and then when you have Jesus, you can pick and choose the best of all the worlds. I can help Hawaii and raise awareness of the awful colonization that happened and is currently happening while still going to my church in Texas. I can show aloha spirit when I'm in Dallas in traffic. You can be liberal on some issues and conservative on some issues and have friends on both sides. Like, these are really good things. It's good to have that balance and be able to see both sides. Okay. With all that said, I feel like I need more coffee before. Is the coffee like right out there or no? I also have to pee. Can you? Okay. He's just going to walk back in and I'm going to be screaming about dead babies. And he's going to be like, I needed to see the setup. Let's save that. Let's get to, we had some Instagram stuff. I want to make sure I didn't get any dating. I have my phone off. My favorite person texted me. I asked Instagram. No coffee? No, just black. What a good kid he is. We have to guide him, Sam. Okay, let's see. I asked a question on Instagram and I said, should Christians use dating sites? Well, actually, I phrased it. Should Christians or anyone use dating sites, or are they destroying us? Carson, who goes to my church, he goes, it's not destroying us, LOL. Like any tool, it's all about how you use it. Was that kind of the conclusion we came to last week, Sam? Yeah, like Sam and I, guys, if you didn't, it was such a fun episode. Sam and I destroyed dating sites and Christian dating sites on last week's episode. But I think in reality, we've also, that was the conclusion. Oh, this is good. He goes, if you use the church lobby as a dating pool and then complain to your friends about why you can't find the one, I'd argue it's ultimately the same concept. So good. I like that a lot. My buddy Sam said, oh, I can be serious in your DMs for once. It's all about intention, like going to a bar. Are you just going to have a drink or two and bounce, or are you going to get plastered? If you're going on dating sites, even with the slightest temptation that hookups are allowed, you need to stay off. He met his incredible wife on a dating app, and here we are. And then he ruined the whole thing by leaving flame emojis. I will say I've met his wife, and his wife is incredible, and they are my favorite couple. They're the couple I stayed with who brought me to church for the first time when I was homeless. So can confirm. Ariana wrote, what does IMO mean? In my opinion. Jesus, I'm so old. And what app am I on? Instagram. And this is a phone. Okay. IMO, those apps are designed to keep you on there and subscribe for money, not for a genuine long-term connection. It dilutes the human experience of getting to know someone and creates this pressure to be this projected ideal self instead of the slow burn of connecting with someone and learning who they really are, the good, bad, and ugly. Also, that one couple we know, fuck you, Sam, that it worked out for on the app that we repeat to ourself to stay on the app when we don't really want to, equal app sponsors. So good. That's my favorite. So good. So good. So good. Denise? Oh, did not respond. She just wrote something else. Blake, dating apps are not bad. People should just have to go to therapy before using one. That way they don't bring as much of their baggage with them to the next short or long-term relationship. Awesome. And those are my answers. I thought those were great. Yeah, I love that. Cool. Thank you guys for writing in. If you want to be more involved in the conversation, you can follow me on Instagram at the Jamie Kilstein. You can join us live Monday nights when these podcasts premiere at 8 p.m. Central Time Monday night. You can subscribe to my newsletter. My newsletter is free. It's where I write about mental health. It's the only place you can see like my like long form writing. Thank you, buddy. Great. Such a good, solid. We're gonna get. Do you have a girlfriend? Interesting. I bet we can find Jake a wife on this show. Okay. The newsletter. It's where I write, and we always ask a question, and you can chime in, but you can sign up for the newsletter. It's totally free. You get it every Monday. Yeah, I write about mental health. I write about what I'm reading, what I'm listening to, what's inspiring me, what I'm struggling with. You just go to backrowpod.com, enter your email. Just goes to us. You're on the mailing list. We got some huge announcements coming up, including a live show that's completely sold out. But lots of really exciting stuff is happening over on this end. So you can find out about it first on the mailing list. Also, if you're not subscribed on YouTube, you can subscribe. The YouTube link is on Back Row Pod as well. Give it a review on Spotify, on iTunes, 5 stars. Leave a little comment how the show has helped you. The most important thing you can do is tell a friend about the show. If one of the clips hits you or thinks it'll help somebody, send it to them. All right, I'm going to end on Israel-Palestine. But so the Instagram question, it was kind of like a vague. It was just kind of talking about, I would tie it into imposter syndrome, but it's when you are feeling like a burden to other people. And that could be as big as every interaction I'm doing is trash. It could be you've just felt really needy with your girlfriend. And you're just like, you feel bad that you like need all this like validation and you're like, I don't want to ask her, but I'm like, and it almost like makes you feel worse. It could be at work. You just feel like people aren't listening to you. There are so many ways that we tell ourselves we are a burden to others. God, the thing about the solo podcast and having all these cups is there's no moment where I can just like take a chill sip. Okay. So the first thing, okay. So I have like sweet advice, but I also kind of have like asshole advice. And sometimes the asshole advice is really helpful. The asshole advice is people who are actually a burden don't think like this. You know what I mean? Like people who are like selfish and sucking your time away and just like every time you text them or they text you, you know you're just something negative is coming or like they're about to make you feel bad. The person in your family who like you desperately want to tell you're in a new relationship, but you know they're just going to shit all over it. Those people are kind of burdens. And those people are never sitting around being like, man, I really feel like a burden. They are like, I am crushing it. And then they're just bothering people. The problem with being a sweet person, the problem with being empathetic, the problem with being, caring about what other people think is that we put it all on ourselves so much where we're almost like, we think so much about how other people feel that if those people aren't feeling good, we automatically kind of assume it's our fault. Every time Malachi has called me, I'm assuming I'm fired. My trainer has become one of my best friends. His name is Trevor Merritt. You should follow him on Instagram. Ooh, he'll be so surprised if just like 100 new Christians follow him on Instagram. He has such good stuff for like mobility and recovery. He's a total wizard. His name is Trevor Merritt. What's his actual Instagram? His Instagram. Will you guys just follow him and just start commenting and not tell him where? Trevor, T-R-E-V-O-R, Merritt, M-E-R-R-I-T-T, _. Trevor Merritt, _. He's the best. So he's become like my best bud because we were training one-on-one as this breakup was happening. And I was like, man, this is so awesome. Like what, not only do I get a good training partner, he's pushing me, but he just had such good advice. And he was like, just rock solid. It was just like a good guy in my corner when I was struggling. And every day I would come in, he'd be like, how is it today? And I'm like, oh, man, I thought it could work, but like we got into a fight and like blah, blah. And every day. He wanted to be there for me. He offered. And I would try to be like, hey, how are you? Are you good? I don't want to just talk about me. And he's like, yeah, I'm fine, brother. Just like, what's going on with you? So one day, like this was like 2 weeks ago. So like long after the breakup, but like 2 weeks ago, it was me, him, and our MMA fighter friend. And they, because I'm injured, they can do kind of more serious workouts. So sometimes I have to, if we're doing like a circuit, I have to go like lighter, if we're doing like a leg thing. And I like show up a little late and he just goes, what he was doing was actually helping me. He goes, hey, you can't do what me and Andy are doing today. So here's what I want you to do, this, this, and this. So now I'm kind of like working out by myself in an empty gym. They were already like jumping rope because I was late. So, and suddenly I just started playing these crazy stories where it wasn't like you were late. They started warming up. Andy has to get to his job. He took the time to make you a workout for free, by the way. I do not pay him any money. I pay him $0. And I was just like, I immediately was like, I think Trevor hates me. And then I was like, he hates me because all I've done is come in and I've sucked his energy away and I've just been such a fucking burden because all I've been talking about is like my life and what I'm struggling with. And now I'm really happy. So now I'm just telling him how happy I am and he probably thinks I'm crazy. And so I asked him, I go, hey, man, are we good? I hope I like didn't do anything to like offend you. And he was just like, dude, what are you talking about? He was like, we were just like in a rush and like, I love you. And like, you're my best friend or like, you're one of my close friends. Like, what's going on? And I was like, oh, okay. Like, it was just completely made up in my head. So a pragmatic piece of advice is if you think you're a burden to someone, you can ask them. And you can ask them like really gently and be like, hey, this is probably me and I think I'm going crazy. But I've just been feeling a lot of self-doubt. Like, am I being a good friend for you? Or like, is there more I can do at my job? Whatever it is, right? Am I being a good partner? And you just ask them. And what I noticed is if I don't ask somebody, then I think that even happened that day. I thought Trev was mad at me. And then I went somewhere else. And I was like, I don't think they like me. Like, it's contagious. You just go, they're all after me. And suddenly you're just going crazy thinking that everyone's after you. So I think that asking someone and then they go, no. And you go, oh. And then, but the problem is when you already feel like a burden, you don't want to ask them because then you're more of a burden. But also, like, you got to fix it, right? And so asking them, finding out it's a lie, also doing kind of what we talked about earlier on the show, which is just like taking care of yourself. It's like the more confident I am, the less of a burden I feel. You know, I felt like I was a burden when I was in an unhealthy relationship because I wasn't taking care of myself. Now I'm crushing it. I don't feel like a burden at all. Like, you want to get to the point where you show up at church and you're like, I am delighting this room full of people. Or where you show up in your relationship and you're like, I am bringing the best version of myself to this relationship. And then it's just a lot hard. It's still going to happen. You're still going to have imposter syndrome, blah, blah, blah. But it's a lot harder. It's a lot harder to feel that way. So, yeah, I think those are the main pieces of advice. Take care of yourself. Build yourself up. Ask, expose that it's a lie. Know that it probably is a lie and remind yourself that bad people who are actually burdens don't think this way, which really sucks. And then I hate talking about this. I hate it. I've said this before. When I first became a Christian, I go, everything but the devil. That's just stupid. But the more that the enemy, which is the adult way we Christians say the devil now, the enemy sounds like we're fighting terrorists. The devil sounds like we're a scared child. But those voices in your head that are telling you you're not good enough and stuff like that, they're lies. And it actually does really help me because usually it hits the hardest when I'm about to do something dope. You know, we have this app launching and we can't even talk about how big it's going to be. I guess, well, Lecrae and Michelle were announced, right? So we can say that now publicly. Yeah. So Lecrae's part of it. I'm part of it. Michelle Williams from Destiny's Child's part of it. Tim Ross is spearheading it. That's just the beginning. So like, ooh. It's pretty massive. Our first live show launching it is completely sold out. If me, Jake, Sam, Tim, if we started hating ourselves recently, it's probably a reason. You know what I mean? Like, Tim Kennedy told me this. And I think if Tim Ross told me this, maybe I wouldn't take it as seriously because I'm like, you're a pastor. You have to say stuff like the enemy's attacking me. But Tim Kennedy's Christian, but he's a scary sniper who used to fight in the UFC. And when he says things to me, I respect him as much as I respect Tim Ross, but there's just a little more fear. Look, I can take Tim Ross in a fight. That's all I'm saying. Not saying it's going to happen. I'm just saying. Tim Kennedy, I can't. And even if I could, he could shoot me. He's better at that than I am. He goes, you're a threat, dude. Like, you're a threat to the devil. And I'm not a threat because, I mean, you guys saw me nervously try to talk about the Bible. I'm not a threat because of my theology. I'm a threat because I can show people that anyone can be loved by Jesus. I'm a threat because I can call out Christians when they're being hateful or full of shit because I'm not tied to a religion. I'm tied to God. I'm a threat because I can, the stereotype of Christians not being funny or not being able to make fun of themselves or not being like, I can dispel that. And the more I've pursued this, the more doubts and voices I've heard. And so your burden is so easy. It's so easy, dude. It's so hacky of the devil just to be like, you're a burden. Because it ties into insecurities we've had since we were kids. Me being like, you're not good enough to be a Christian. You've made too many mistakes, you know. That ties into all of my insecurities. You're never going to find love. That ties into my biggest insecurity. So I truly, truly think that if you're getting attacked a lot and you're feeling a lot of these doubts, you're probably like right before a breakthrough and right before doing something big and dope in your life. And so when that happens, you get to go to war and you get to go like, oh, this isn't just my self-hatred versus me. This is like my purpose that God gave me, going to war with a liar. And if you're an atheist, that liar could just be your voice, whatever. I don't care. I don't care how you frame it, but they're lies. And when you can break through that wall, something big is about to happen on the other side is my guess. How long have we been recording, everybody? All right, here we go. I'm not going to get it. I'm going to make this short. I'm not going to get into what happened in Israel, what happened in Palestine. We know, we've watched the news. They have been fighting for a very long time. This started with Hamas, committing a terrible act of terror, murder, kidnapping. Can't get worse. Every nation has the right to defend themselves. Israel has the right to defend itself. America has the right to defend itself. Palestine has the right to defend itself. We could do what Twitter's doing right now and go tit for tat. Hamas did this. This thing that was said that Hamas was doing was actually a lie, and the media is apologizing for it, but very quiet. Professor said anti-Semitic stuff defending Hamas. Both sides have done fucked up things. What breaks my heart is that you're not allowed anymore to show sympathy for both sides. And that doesn't mean the Israeli politics of the blockade and Netanyahu. And that doesn't mean terrorists. This isn't, guys, we really got to come together and like pray for Hamas. This isn't that. But the fact that you can see on your Twitter feed a dead Israeli baby and a dead Palestinian baby, and you feel like you have to choose which baby am I supposed to be sad for? And it becomes like a video game where they're not even real babies. You're not even thinking about how that baby used to laugh or how that baby used to smile at their mom or how that baby used to play. You just go, this is the right side baby and this is the wrong side baby. And they're both dead. And so I guess I have to pick one baby. Well, what baby did that? Who did that baby vote for? Was that like a pro Netanyahu baby? Or was that like one of the good Jews for peace baby? Or what baby was it? Was this baby pro Hamas? Or was this baby just like born in Palestine? And like, what football team does that baby like? And like, can I relate more to this baby? And like, you're only allowed to feel bad for one dead baby. How there is not more outrage, posts, whatever, especially in the Christian community, that we're so thirsty, we're so bloodthirsty to pick who we're mad at that we don't have time to truly feel the pain of everybody going through this. And maybe that's not marketable. And maybe it's hard to put on a meme. And maybe eventually I do have to pick a side. But I do not think it is unreasonable to say Palestinians are suffering right now. And that doesn't mean I'm pro Hamas. Jews are suffering right now. And that doesn't mean I approve of many of the decisions made by the Israeli government. I don't like the American government. Do you? No, you don't like the American government. Does that mean you hate America? No. Oftentimes, that means that you love America, which is why you hate seeing greedy corporate monsters destroy the country you love. So would you say, as someone who is raised Jewish, who has family in Israel, that me saying the Israeli government has done horrific things to the Palestinian people, is that anti-Semitic? Or is that me defending the people I love by criticizing their government? I don't want my people to kill civilians, right? And I realize that war is complicated. And I realize that Hamas is responsible for civilian casualties. And I also realize that Israel is responsible for civilian casualties. Both of these things can be true, man. But what's happening on Twitter is you're having people go, well, what about this Hamas terrorist attack? And then you're having people go, well, in Israel, Operation Cast Lead, 400 kids died. Yeah, all of this is true. But what is missing is us stopping and actually thinking about the kids who are being killed. I'm seeing people on Twitter, if you bring up Palestinian kids who died, they're saying you're anti-Semitic. What? What are you talking about? You're allowed to say, I don't want Palestinian kids being killed. And that's not anti-Semitic. If you said, I don't like Palestinians being killed, also the Jews run the media. Okay. Yeah, sure, guys. Anti-Semitic. Not good. Don't say that, right? You're also allowed to say that what happened to these Israeli civilians is horrific and that I do not, Jamie, support Hamas. Does that mean I don't care about Palestinians? No. Does that mean I'm blindly supporting Israel? No. These things should not be complicated. You know, I mean, God, guys, do the research on your own, man. But like, there's an article in the Wall Street Journal, like Netanyahu helped prop up Hamas, right? Like, there have been times where both sides have gone for peace and the other side has screwed it up. But you know who's not getting a say in fucking any of this? The kids on both sides, the civilians on both sides, the women on both sides. You know, I want to hear more from the Jews who live in Israel who want peace for Palestine. I want to hear more from the Palestinians who love their Jewish brothers and want an end to this war and don't support Hamas. We don't hear those voices because we're only propping up the voices that are screaming for more war and more destruction. And for the love of God, as a Christian, I feel like we should be praying for civilians on both sides. You know, we shouldn't just be like, hey guys, pray for Israel, or hey guys, pray for Palestine. Every church that's saying pray for one of them needs to be saying pray for both. Why aren't we praying for Israel and Palestine, right? Why aren't we praying for the good people who don't want war, who want peace, who aren't racist or anti-Semitic? Why aren't we praying for them to get propped up? And why aren't we praying for these warmongers to step down? Why are we only praying for one side and then just leaving the other babies to die, right? Again, I'm a podcaster. I'm a comedian. I've defended Palestine for a long time. I'm Jewish. It's really complicated. I'm not going to have a solution. But I can tell you one thing we can do right now. Do you know, same thing that's happening September 11th. Remember September 11th. The slogan is never forget. Remember, Netanyahu used the term axis of evil in a press conference this week. You remember what that led to? You remember how many Americans died? That led to us bombing two countries that did nothing, that didn't do anything. Wasn't bin Laden. They didn't do September 11th. Breaking news. Iraq did not do September 11th. The same fear-mongering we're hearing right now. There were a lot of hate crimes, including murders in America of Muslims this week, right? There is plenty, and has always been, of anti-Semitism in America. Our language and rhetoric has to do with this. I thought Ron DeSantis was going to be like the chill Trump, but he gave some press conference being like Palestinians should never be allowed in America. They're all terrorists. And then he kind of like backtracked and was like, well, they all are anti-Semitic. Jesus, you can't say an entire people. Didn't we get mad at Trump for saying that? For being like, all Mexicans are rapists. Don't let them over our border. Isn't DeSantis supposed to be the anti-Trump? That's the same language. I'm not trying to get political. But guys, Biden's an idiot. There you go. There's my preface. I can criticize DeSantis because Biden's an idiot. Who knows what Biden's doing in Israel right now? I'm sure it's bad. All right? And by now, I mean last week. We taped this on last Wednesday. What we can do right now, we cannot solve decades of war and land disputes. But what we can do right now is watch our language. And are we contributing to hate against Jews or Muslims? Is all you're posting anti one side, right? Is there something you can do at your workplace, at your school, in your conversations, on social media, that just tells everyone to take a breath and pray that there aren't lives lost, that we're not about to go into World War III, that if you're not hearing about casualties on one side, there's probably more to that story, right? Where are America's interests? Where are our financial interests? What are peaceful solutions for Palestine? If you're totally pro-Israel, great, man. Do you have peaceful? So what would you do if you were in Palestine right now? What would you do if you were innocent and you're being shelled? Like, I don't know what the solution is. I saw this journalist, and then I'll end with this. I think Li Fang, I'll piss off both sides, goes, you know, all the progressives who are super pro Palestine would be pretty upset to see how a lot of these Muslim countries treat LGBTQ people. And all of these Republicans who are blindly pro-Israel would be infinitely more violent than Hamas is if, like, West Virginia got barricaded like Palestine is being barricaded by, like, a bigger country. They would fight back. And I think that's a really good point. I think when we talk about politics, we have to ask ourselves where we are being hypocritical, where we are being reactionary, where we are being bloodthirsty. And I think we need to make more room for empathy, compassion, listening, kindness, and love, period. And so if you're confused and you don't know what's going on in Israel, Palestine, and you hear this bad thing that Israel did and this bad thing that Palestine did, they might both be true. They might both not be true. But you also don't have to have a hot take. You don't have to post. You don't have to blindly repost things because that's the cool thing to do. You can just shut up. You can just research. You can just pray for peace. That is infinitely more helpful than being part of the chorus for hatred and war, which is what we always see. If you truly are never supposed to forget 9/11, then we need to remember what we did after 9/11 based on fear and how that led to more American deaths that happened on September 11th, that led to hundreds of thousands of innocent people in the Middle East dying. And we do not want to repeat that because it is never the powerful people that get punished. Netanyahu and the leader of Hamas are not going to fist fight in the middle of the desert. I would love to see that. That is how war should be fought. If Joe Biden wants to go to war with Iran, then just gear up, son. Wrap those hands and start stretching out and get limber and go fight, right? But I'm tired of seeing innocent people being brought into this fight, and then cheerleaders and reporters in America who have never, never once in their life had to do a push-up, had to throw a punch, had to defend their family against terrorists, but they can just sit on Twitter all day and advocate for wars that they will never see the consequences for. I think if you truly want to do something, you should be advocating for peace. And yes, there are times where peace is not an option and you have to figure out a way to strategically attack terrorists, right? Strategically go after them and not just advocate for blindly bombing an entire nation, which, by the way, is going to make more terrorists. That's what blowback is. That's what September 11th was. Osama bin Laden literally said, he didn't say, oh, I hate them for their freedom and freedom fries. He literally said that it is a direct response to America's foreign policy that has killed so many civilians, right? So every time we blow up a family that didn't do anything, that kid is a potential terrorist, right? We need to think about those things. And if those things aren't on your mind when you just throw out some tweet that says we need to bomb Palestine or we should go after all Jews, then shut the fuck up. You're not adding to it, right? Stay home, pray, become a better person, or sign up, dude. Go sign up for the military and do something about it. But don't just act tough behind Twitter and advocate for the ruining of an entire nation. Smash that like button. Guys, my voice is shot. I hope that made sense. I love you all. I hate to see it. We all hate to see it. I don't pretend to be better than anybody or know more than anybody. This is how I'm seeing it, man. I would love to see more voices advocating for peace. I would love to see more voices showing compassion for everybody. If it wasn't clear, and if you're going to twist my words around, anti-Semitism is bad. Islamophobia is bad. Killing Jews is bad. Killing Muslims is bad. Terrorism is bad. Terrorism is bad. Okay, that's it. We'll see you guys next week. Thank you so much for the support. And yeah, that's it. Aloha.